Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, excuse me, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 3185. That's 3185. I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA, and I am so honored tonight with the guests that we have, which I was telling her all about before the show started. And every year I have Child Help on, okay? Child Help is, if not, the oldest organization, is one of the oldest organizations where they deal with, you know, child abuse, and they have so many programs, and she has so much to speak about. And they have my, you know, I just respect them big time, because of the work that they do, all right? So before we get to her, and I see that Lori is here. Thank you, Lori. Let me read the mission statement, and then we're going to get to our guest. And I hope you sit and listen, because, you see, a lot of times people will say to me, well, Carol, you have the podcast, the blog, talk, whichever way they want to word it, you and Bill and all this sort of stuff. But what is there really out there other than what you offer? And we offer so much in NASCA, and they go, and they're eating like that pussycat you see on the on the phone, because we do offer a lot of things. However, there's only one Child Help, okay? And that makes the difference. Okay, let me read the mission statement. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Okay, and so then also to offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And we're getting a nice full panel here. That's very good. Number here is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. We have room for about maybe three more. But anyway, what I want to do is to introduce you, to Child Help, if you don't already know about Child Help, because Child Help is one of the very, very best organizations that I know of, and I've been around the block a few times, and actually one more block, because today is my birthday, and look where I am, okay? Is that dedication? Thank you. Here I am. So anyway... I had to shove my kids out. I have to do the radio show. Goodbye. I love you. Thank you so much. But anyway, So this is really an honor to have you on, Daphne. Her name is Daphne Young. She is from Scottsdale, Arizona. She is the Chief Communications Officer of Child Help and is now celebrating its 40th anniversary. Childhood features a hotline, 1-800-4-CHILD. Everyone out there, I talk to you about the cards that I hand out many times, many places. And they'll see that number, 1-800-4-CHILD. And that offers crisis intervention, information, and referrals to thousands of emergencies and social service. Okay? So Child Help just offers so many things. It has programs. It has a new program that she's going to want to talk about. So we have a nice amount of people here now, and I'm glad to see that. And I will call on you after we give, you know, Daphne a chance to speak and to get into what she wants to talk about tonight, because the floor is yours. Yes, it is.
Oh, thank you so much, Carol, and happy birthday, first and foremost.
Thank
it is great to make the annual pilgrimage back here, and I think being here on your birthday does show your dedication to not just the show, but the survivors out there who need your voice and need this support so desperately, and what a great service you all offer. So it's a privilege to be here. And indeed, Child Help's hotline is 40 years old, and Child Help itself is over 60 years old. And we have programs and services across the country, from residential treatment to advocacy centers to foster care and adoption, and all designed to kind of address the continuum of care of kids, and through animal and art therapy, just helping the little ones find their voice. And then through our hotline, 1-800-FOR-A-CHILD, as you know, that's not just for children. Obviously, we're there for a child in crisis or a parent in need, even an offending parent, as somebody who says, I'm at my wit's end and I'm about to shake my baby, and we say, go outside, sit on the stoop, talk to us. We're going to get you help. Do not touch that child. So it's preventative as well, but it's also for survivors. So if someone listens to the show and gets triggered by a story or some information, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can say, hey, I can't sleep. This is what happened to me when I was little. Maybe I haven't shared my story yet. And there's a professional crisis counselor there at all hours to hear that story and kind of help you through the night.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And, you know, we need that so badly because, you know, I used to have terrible nightmares and so forth. And I still have them once in a great while. But and I'm alone, okay? So the boogeyman seems even bigger, okay?
I can roll over
and poke someone and say, hey, you know. But, yeah, we like I do that too, the contact person. I'm the night owl, okay, for this organization. And in the AM hours, yeah, I get a lot of calls too. And because people, I don't know, maybe they're having nightmares or maybe they can't go to sleep, like you said. Maybe they have something heavy on their mind that's really bothering them. Maybe they've had flashbacks and they don't know how to deal with that. Maybe they feel suicidal and they need someone to reach out to. I've had a 17-year-old recently call me. Oh, my God. And so, you know, there's, you know, we're here, you're there, and Child Help is just so, so fantastic, you know.
Well, so, and it's, and I think when people hear the name Child Help, right, we forget that the child inside, maybe that was never taken care of, especially if you didn't have a good support network, even when that little person is still inside of you when you grow up, that child needs nurturing, even if you're 50, 60, 70, 80. I've been at events where a woman in her 90s stood up and said, I've never told this story and disclosed her abuse. And all it takes is a supportive community and for someone to understand that abuse is never your fault. And if you're having anxiety or depression or fears in the night, just getting some grounding exercises, having someone talk you through it, listen to what happened to you and maybe give you just, you know, hey, let's do some basic counting exercises. Let's do some five senses stuff, kind of get you back in the moment, out of the past and back into the present and, you know, move you towards that good night's sleep that you deserve.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it does make a big difference, you know. I'm sure the people get back to you. I know they've gotten back to me at times, you know, just thanking me for being there. And, you know, when we go through this horrible, horrific abuse, look, we need someone to talk to at times, even a seasoned person like myself, okay? I mean, my cat is so sick and tired of me. I tell her everything. You know what I'm saying? It's not the same. You know? So who am I going to do, call myself? I don't know. So
no,
you know,
counselors need counselors, right? We know that. Like the brightest minds and people who are experts in the field still need somebody that they can kind of be free with and unload on a little bit and recalibrate with so that they come back stronger for the communities they serve.
That's true. That's very, very true. You know, let me tell you, Daphne, when I worked at Greystone, I worked with the psychiatrist, and I found out that they had their own psychiatrist, and I busted out laughing. Now, you know I have a sense of humor, okay? So when I heard that, I started just like rolling on the floor laughing, but in the other room, because you look at psychiatrists and you think of them like with doctors, you think of them like as being God. I mean, we're taught to, you know, like to look at them because they know more than we do, the doctors and all sort of stuff. So it's so important, even for people out there, never to feel ashamed. You know, I don't care what position you hold. You know that. If you need someone to talk to, You can call the hotline service. You can call me. You can call other people. You know, that's what we do, because we're not perfect.
And we're really focused on self-care for our hotline counselors, getting help and reaching out, because you hear some of the most horrific stories you'll hear in your life. They also get calls from perpetrators, and they hear repellent disclosures from abusers that really weigh heavily on their hearts, or stories of little kids that need intervention and they're trying to work with the local police and whatnot, or anonymous stories from survivors. And so they really carry a burden of these stories on their shoulders, and they have big hearts and they love what they do. But self-care is so important for anybody that works in this industry, because you do carry a heavy load, the stories and the circumstances of others. And so taking care of yourself, just make sure that you can show up as your best self for those in need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you with that. You know, it's so important. And I've had people say to me, Carol, you know, maybe you should start looking at yourself a little bit and just take a break. You should take a break, a two-day break, all right? Because if I'm not on the show, I'm doing research. I love to do research, okay? And I have some things written down here. And it's just that sometimes I think our brain, you know, mine gets jammed at times, and I just simply have to sort of like say, let go, Carol, go out, take a walk, take a ride, go buy yourself something pretty. It doesn't have to be big.
Right.
A diamond could be little, right? No, I'm teasing. I wouldn't do that. But you know what I'm saying, just do something, you know, like to get yourself out of the situation that you're in, the environment. Okay, get yourself out of the house. Go get some fresh air if there is any. I don't know, whatever. Just get out of the house.
As they say on social media, go touch some grass, right? Get away from the screen. Go outside.
Right.
Get into nature a little bit. Touch a little grass. Get your spirit renewed, because sometimes we get so entrenched in the work because we believe in it and it matters so deeply that you can lose your center. And so being able to practice a little of that self-care, it only makes you better for the communities that you serve. And you all do such great work here, but you know that sometimes you can get that overload, just so many stories, or the research can sometimes feel overwhelming because you just think, is there ever going to be an end to any of this? And so being able to step back, get a big picture is so important. And I also think creating and making new things that lessen the load on survivors is essential. And it's part of, you know, when I said I wanted to come share with you some of the new research, the new stuff, because I know that research is right up your alley. One of the things that we had seen so many headlines, especially when you remember the Nassar victims, these women who are sister survivors of this horrible abuse in gymnastics, and all these sports stories, Sandusky, and all the stuff we had been seeing for so long with Penn State, we just said there's got to be some something to do for all of this abuse in youth athletics. We try to get in the schools with our prevention education called Child Help Speak Up, Be Safe, where we're teaching body safety, how to tell a safe adult, letting kids know abuse is not your fault, which, by the way, is very hard these days to get into schools. And I have a big bone to pick with anyone that stands in the way of getting kids the body safety they need, because abusers flourish when children are not armed with the simple tools to know that they deserve to be protected, that their bodies deserve to be safe. And so prevention education that's simple and straightforward. You know, a lot of parents say, well, I don't want my kid learning that. That's like sex education. No, it's not. It is body safety. And we know that a majority of children are being abused in homes by family or friends of family, by people they know. So they're not always being protected. And if they can learn, it's my body, how I have choices, how to say no, how to speak up and be safe, this is essential. And so we're already in the schools doing this kind of work preventatively. But we realize there's this whole arena of like after school stuff, like sports. And so we just thought, well, let's find out what's being done there. And we realized that there was nothing of its kind where kids could call and just talk about like a strange experience with a coach, or a parent could say, like, how do I keep my kids safe when they go travel for an away game, like for a cheerleading competition or a football game? And so we worked with some of the best experts in the world. And my favorite part is my cohorts at the Child Help National Hotline made a fantasy list of like top 10 experts. And then our lead started making phone calls. And I always tell people, like, just make the list and daydream big and then give it a shot. And I was trying to keep my expectations low, like, well, we'll make some calls and we'll see where it goes and this and that. Every top expert we called globally, Dr. Sterling and people in Canada and England, were just like, yes, we need this. We'll work with you. We'll do it for free. We'll Dr. Kavanaugh, you know, we'll make a curriculum for you. We've done some of this research. There's nothing good out there. Let's work together. And they really helped us create a curriculum and a plan and a hotline to assist and support athletes, parents, coaches, sports communities who are concerned about emotional, physical, and sexual abuse. And we have athlete-centered counselors who offer confidential support and resources, and you can call, text, or chat online. So it's a super valuable service, and it's brand new, and it's the only kind in the world. And if your viewers and listeners or your radio fans will write down 888-279-1026. It's available Monday through Friday from noon to 8 to Pacific Standard Time. And if you call after hours, you'll still reach our 24-hour anonymous hotline. But it is literally the place you want to start. If your kids are going into sports of any kind, if you're a young girl who's, let's say, interested in a college scholarship and your coach is starting to put pressure on you to have private lessons, or we need to chat about you. You have so much talent and you're starting to get a weird feeling in your gut. We can talk through that kind of stuff on the hotline.
That's good. That's so good. You know, when I used to live in Phillipsburg, okay, I've moved up to Oxford, New Jersey now. But when I lived in Peaburg, they had a lot of people. This is one thing that worried me. And I wrote an article about it, which did get published over there. But with the volunteers, you know, no one does any background checks on these people, right? And it occurred to me one day there was a big baseball game going on, and I passed the school and all that stuff, the junior high to high school in that particular school. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's all those guys hanging out around there. And it doesn't have to be guys. It could be girls, too. This is what people don't understand, Daphne, that, you know, they don't understand that women can be pedophiles, too. In fact, the last study shows that there are far more women than we ever at any time ever thought that are pedophiles. And then the Huffington Post a few years ago, and now they're updating it, actually put a list of women's faces, teachers, okay, teachers who were pedophiles. And
absolutely.
But how about the volunteers? You know, this is something that I have a little problem with, because no one really vets them. No one really, you know, looks at them. They just know they're happy to have them. They can help out, you know, on the field, whatever, wherever they're needed. That doesn't mean that they're good people. It means that they could be, you know, people that are in need of help or whatever.
Absolutely. And I'll do you one better. I'll do you one better. Many of the coaches and assistant coaches don't go through background checks. So you bring up one of the most essential points. You have volunteers, coaches, assistant coaches. You have also bus drivers and people who are support staff. And you start to put all this together, and what we know is that predators will always seek out where the children are. They're always going to go to those areas, and sports are just great because you have a lot of privacy. There's locker rooms. There's opportunities to prey upon people's dreams and athletic stardom. And what are you doing when you are helping a young athlete reach their potential? There's a word you hear all the time. You're grooming them for success, grooming them for the Olympics, grooming them for college sports. And we know what grooming means in the abuse world. And so an amazing group, and if you ever get a chance to talk to these folks, the Foundation for Global Sports Development.
Okay. That's interesting, too. Well, I'm glad that people are becoming more aware of it, you know what I'm saying? Because you know, they look at the coaches, and I mean, I'm speaking about kids now. They look at the coaches for guidance and to help them out and to help them, you know, make their dreams come true. Some of them really do want to turn into athletes where they're, you know, are out there. And they can be such horrible people. Look at the school over there in PA, okay, in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Yes. And here, those coaches, a couple of them, you know, what did they do? There was one in particular, a terrible man, and he was working with kids who were poor. Okay, they came from disadvantaged homes. And for God's sake, he was sexually abusing them. And you know what's so bad about all this, Daphne, is the very fact with Penn State, I hate to say their name, but Penn State, but it's well known. So no one said anything. Okay, the people that worked in there who were supposed to be, you know, the reporters, you know, and all this other stuff, and they're supposed to keep an eye out if they see something weird. They didn't do anything. They didn't want to lose their job. And you see,
what we call systemic abuse, right? So you have the perpetrator, and that's the first abuser, and then you have everybody else who are part of the chain of abuse. And actually, when we started talking about this issue, Penn State was one of the big inspirations, as was the Nassar survivors and those and the coolest of all, Judge Aquilano, who never let that Larry Nassar, that dirty doctor, get away with one word against these young women, and all those sister survivors that stood up and told their stories and publicly shared what happened to them. And, you know, when you see doctors and people in high areas of authority act upon young people who are so vulnerable and who are so trusting. We have another guy who's supporting this program named John Vaughn, former NFL player, Redskins, Seattle Seahawks. The Foundation for Global Sports brought him to us as well. And he was a young male who was acted upon by a teen doctor in Michigan. And he didn't know what was happening to him was abuse. And he's a guy that camps outside on campus, and kids walk by and high-five him, and he just holds up a sign that says, "I'm still here." He's demanding justice for what happened to him. And so we see survivors of all ages and young kids just, you know, starting out in sports. And we look at the abuse factors that impact them. So you mentioned the background checks and organizational risks, you know, the hierarchical relationship between coaches and athletes, the fact that it's based on rewards and lots of training, late hours, lots of really intimate time together, and sometimes a lack of parental involvement. You know, just turn the kids over to the coaches and listen to your coach. And then there's locational aspects, being away at tournaments, sharing rooms for travel, being alone with a coach and unsupervised. And then think about sports culture. So I will tell you, I got a call from a reporter one time who there had been an athlete who had beaten his child. And this reporter was clearly a fan of the athlete and said, was trying to get child help to say that the corporal punishment of this child was, it wasn't that bad and this and that. And this child had been whipped until their legs opened with blood was brutalized. And I said, and they said, well, spanking's not illegal and this and that. And then the person said, you know, we're raising a nation of wimps. And I said, you know what? I've never been in a board meeting where I've been able to pull someone across my lap and spank them. I've never run a team meeting at work where I get to smack someone across the face or call them a name or punch them out or give them a spanking. And I said, what abuse does is it shames and harms a child. And there's so many ways to redirect kids without hitting them and hurting them. And so sports culture can sometimes build that, like, don't be a wimp, walk it off. You got a concussion, keep moving. So there's a lots of different ways that kids can be compromised, and it just keeps happening more and more. And so I actually think that organizations are going to have to start doing almost boutique-level services for special types of abuse that are very specific, like abuse in sports.
Right, absolutely. That's so well put. And you're so right. I mean, listen. You don't have to, you know, whip kids and all this other stuff. And corporal punishment, by the way, has many different categories. I'm going to go to the panel in just a second. But it has many different panels. It has categories. At one time, it was okay if you spanked your kid. Okay? Now they're deciding, with the newest research that I've done, and that was just quite frequently, that they don't think that children should be spanked at all. Okay.
Right.
There isn't a right way and there isn't a wrong way. And I always say to parents and people in the past that I've worked with, for God's sake, kids aren't stupid. I'm not talking about 2 years old who can't think, right? I'm talking about, say, 7 years old and up, whatever. They're able to reason. Sit them down and tell them what they're doing wrong and why you're not happy with them. And the worst punishment you can give a kid outside of a beating, right, is to make them write, put a little essay together of why they shouldn't have done what they did. Kids don't like essays, right? So that's heavy-duty punishment to them. And
well,
you're not
laying
a finger on them.
They're teaching them. Yeah, you're teaching them skills, too, that they can use later in life. Because I'll tell you what, if you don't get something right at work, you're going to have to write an email about it. And that's a much better life skill where you're teaching a kid how to be a responsible citizen than teaching, because they're going to do what you did to them to someone else. And maybe that young boy that you whipped so soundly will now become a domestic violence perpetrator, because that's all that little kid learned. And they learned
it
from you.
That's right. I always say that, too. You know, the kids learn what they see. They see what they learn, and they do what you do, too. Now, that's my little line that I, you know, use. And let me go to Lori. I know she wants to say hello to you. Hold on a second. Her mic is open. Lori, yeah. Lori, say hello to Daphne. Maybe you have a comment or a question you'd like to ask.
Yeah, hi,
hello.
Daphne.
Hi.
I am totally intrigued by what you were saying tonight. This is the first time that I've heard you speak, and I'm actually just going to not take up your time. I'm going to sit back because I honestly want to listen to more of what you have to say. It was very informative tonight, and I'm very interested.
Oh, I appreciate it so much, and I'm glad you're here. And, you know, I think you guys put together a community of people that are doing so much listening and sharing information. And for your listeners, I think it's so important because, you know, I think people sit alone oftentimes. You know, we talk about what abuse looks like, and we think about the aftermath. We all know what the effects of abuse are. And sometimes it's the worst case scenario. You know, Carol brought up suicide. We have substance abuse, self-destructive behavior. But even if you're living a very, you know, staid, comfortable life where, you know, you're just going about your business, there's the private anxiety and depression or poor self-esteem, the kinds of things that you put into a kid's life that are so unnecessary. And you know, you bring that into their life by through these harmful behaviors. So I just think, you know, being gentle with each other, and one of the most important things I think that anyone can walk away from a discussion about abuse is, number one, it's never your fault, and number two, when a little person comes to you with a disclosure of any kind, for God's sakes, believe them. Believe that child.
Absolutely. They've done studies on that, Daphne, and, you know, it's 98% of the time, 98% of the time, children are telling the truth, okay, 98%.
Absolutely.
That other little 2% is like when they're feeling threatened and they're told what to say and what not to say, okay? And because there's little people, then they're scared of the person who's yelling at them or telling them this, or you know, saying, hey, if you don't say the right things to the judge or the social workers or whatever, then I'm going to make sure, I'll make your life miserable. You'll be so, so sad that you didn't listen to me.
And that's usually in custody cases, right, where kids are being coached and things like that.
Yeah.
And usually those are so easy to discover. They're very low-level amounts. But the majority of those little kids that come forward, first of all, most kids do not tell. They keep those secrets.
Right.
I'm sure so many of your listeners, you know, this is why I'm totally 100% for removing the statute of limitations for any legal actions, because I'll tell you what, it can take until much later in life before you have a support network, people that care, a show like this, you know, a place where you feel safe, a community, before you could even come forward to say two words about what happened to you. So we've seen it time and time again in all of these cases where people blame the women. Well, why didn't you come forward? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Well, she didn't, he didn't, because they were terrified. They were scared. They felt that because of what happened to them and they don't have all the right answers, they didn't do the quote-unquote right thing, that they won't be supported. And indeed, so many are not believed even when they do come forward. So disclosure and handling disclosures is so critically important. And, you know, if you yourself have not, you know, a listener has not been abused, but someone comes to you, I think we can all talk about what that looks like. But I mean, the first thing you do, obviously, is you avoid denial and blame. And instead of having an extreme reaction, right, somebody comes to you and says, you know, Carol, I never mentioned this. I never said anything about it. I was kind of ashamed. You speak slowly. You speak calmly. You allow them to share their story. You become a trusted person and tell them how much courage. I mean, our program is called Courage First. You know, it takes so much courage just to speak your truth, even to pick up a phone, to call an anonymous line. And then you let them know you did not do anything to deserve this. And you just listen and empathize and don't judge and don't ask rapid questions. Acknowledge how hard it is. And then just provide that reassurance and support and say, you know, you were so brave for coming forward. What are the next steps? Do you have someone in your life you can talk to? If that person who hurt you still has access to children, let's talk about that. Let's talk about keeping those kids safe. Maybe it was, you know, a father who hurt you and now there's grandchildren in the orbit. Let's get those kids away from that abuser and let's empower you by helping them.
That's very good and that's very true. And so often people, like I've said this on air a few times, I went into Sears when Sears was still around. I don't know if it's around by you or not, but it's not by me anymore. But there was this lady working behind me, you know, the counter, and we were talking, and she asked me what I did for a living, and I told her different places that I worked, and then I told her, hey, I'm a part of NASCA, you know, meaning the show. And she said, well, what's it all about? So I told her, and she said, well, you know, and I told her I'd been horribly abused and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And so she said, well, I too was abused, but I never told anyone. Now, this lady you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to judge people's ages. And I don't want anybody judging mine either, okay?
Not heard that.
And today's my birthday, all right? I'm 23
exactly.
again. There you go. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
So anyway, but anyway, we started to talk. And you see, when it's a family person that is, you know, giving you the problem, who's molesting you or sexually abusing you even more, where, you know, where there's actually rape involved. And molestation, by the way, people out there listening, because I've had both, all right? Molestation, to me, is just as bad as being raped, okay?
Yeah.
And that's sort of like grooming you when you're being molested for a whole long time, you know, and then all of a sudden it goes
right.
into the rape part, the rape scene. They're both, to me, equal, okay? Now, in this lady's particular case, she was just simply raped, and there was no molestation before. And I said, well, why didn't you tell? And she said, well, the first thing is that it would be exposing my family. See?
Uh-huh.
And I don't want my family, in other words, she doesn't want the dirty laundry, as they used to say, out in front of
yeah.
everybody to see, all right? And I said, well, what about the fear factor? Are you afraid to tell? Is that part of your, you know, problems for not telling? And she said, yeah, yeah.
yeah.
It went on for years, and I handled it. She handled it, right? She handled it.
Right.
And she just stuffed it down. She never told him. She's my guy. I can't believe how easily I'm speaking to you. And I said, well, you know who I am now because I've told you, and also I'm a survivor as well, just like you. And she says, I'm a survivor? I said, you're standing there, aren't you? And I made her laugh.
Absolutely. Well, it's you're
yeah.
an oasis in the desert. When somebody comes forward and says, I do this work, right, I get this all the time too, it's for some people, it's the first time they've ever disclosed, the first time that they've shared their hearts. And you know, that's part of why I think a thing like the hotline, a free hotline, is so important, because if you've just disclosed to someone, that you feel very exposed. I mean, someone like you who has a public-facing personality, there's a woman we work with, Kathy Picard, who's changed a bunch of laws and written a book, Life with My Idiot Family, and she talks a lot about her personal abuse, and she sued. She changed the laws in Massachusetts to sue her abuser. And she said, who cares if you sue them for a dollar? It's just that the truth gets out, the family learns about it, and here you go. And so she is one of these people who's told her story so many times that she has this great comfort level with it. She, as do you, where it's just like, here's my story. You can. It's not that you're emotionless about it, but you're just, the strength of the times you've told it is there, and you're realizing that you're being a conduit for others to share. But for some who've come forward for the first time, and when they tell you, oh, you know, I handled it, and you realize, well, you might have handled it by drinking or having eating disorders
mm-hmm.
or having sleep disorders or having, we know how many physical ailments and sicknesses survivors go through, and emotional and all kinds of things. And so, but to your point, you're standing there and there's some bravery there, and somebody has just told you, you know, you're a pretty strong lady. But then they might have, you know, think, well, I mean, I feel weird that I said something. And so even just starting that process of telling again and again, calling a hotline like 1-800-4-CHILD, calling a friend and saying, listen, I revealed something today that was uncomfortable and that maybe you don't know that much about me. And getting that safe people in your life to bolster you up, because I bet you that Christmas is different once you've come forward to a few people. You're not just going to walk into that house again, look at that abuser, and just hang your head, right? A lot of people change their lives after telling their stories.
That's true. That's absolutely so, so true. I mean, today, when people ask me to tell my story, I don't know how many times I've told it now. Because I've told
right.
in universities and churches, believe it or not. I didn't get in
which
the Catholic
Church yet. Which
is a
great place to tell them.
Okay.
Yep.
I haven't been invited there yet, okay? And I'm Catholic, okay? So, but with other churches, it's usually the Methodist Church, and then there's I don't know what that other church was. Didn't really have a denomination. I don't know what they were, but there was a church. And I was so treated well. I was so treated
yeah.
well. And I really got such a charge out of being able to work at that church. I'm going to go back there. I like them. And I took in videos, you know, of children, you know, being abused. Nothing so heavy that if someone was, like, triggered or get triggered, but just you get the idea and what it does
right.
to a child, you know. You have to be
well,
careful.
There's so much abuse in communities of faith with youth pastors and in
mm-hmm.
the church because, again, it is wherever you have access to children in need and people who work with children in positions of power. And so I took Speak Up Be Safe to the Baptist Church, and I love
mm-hmm.
what the pastor said before we started. You know, some people are like, well, this is a good, clean church. And he said, listen, the devil can put on a pair of Sunday shoes over his hooves and come walking in here like anyone else. So we're going to sit
That's
here,
right.
we're going to listen to this, and we're going to keep our kids safe. And I thought that was the coolest message. And I worked with a woman in the diocese who was a prevention coordinator for the Catholic Church. And, boy, she was tough as nails, and she had a clipboard. And she would go through the churches, and she'd say, you work with children, so – I don't want any blinds on these windows, and I want a door that doesn't lock. And she started going through the space, and she said, if we create safer spaces, people just don't have the opportunity. She would do things like make you cut the eaves in an area that could be private, for example. I mean, she was brilliant at this, and when she came in and there was still some shade on the door, what did she do? She ripped them down. She said, sorry, you didn't take these down in time. He goes, well, it's hot in here, and the sun comes in, and she said, well, too bad then. You know, turn
right?
up the air conditioner, right, because I'm going to rip
mm-hmm.
these shades down because I don't want you to have an enclosed box where you can bring a child in here for counseling that can't be seen. So we want open spaces for kids. We don't want adults in closed doors or windows working with children. So I think that any community where children are served should have a prevention lens that just makes the space inhospitable to predators. And predators will move on to a different space because, I know, it's too hard here. I can't, you know, I can't lock a door. I can't get away from, you know. They'll find a different place to go if you put that prevention in place.
I think that's brilliant. Like you said, that's a very good word. Because
mm-hmm.
So often, I mean, I've heard of cases, I'm sure we all have, okay, those of us who work in the field and so forth, where a child would have detention, so I'll use detention.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the only one, that had detention, okay. So the kid goes in for detention, and it turns out that teacher doesn't have to keep their hands to themselves. And that child is alone with the teacher, and no one knows because the door is closed, and like you said, the shades are down, and this is after hours, too. So most people are leaving, even other teachers and so forth. I mean, this kid's in a bad place.
Right.
And so if you take those, you know, the doors down, like you said, and the shades off the windows and all the things that, you know, might cause not being able to know what's going on the other side of the door,
yeah.
then, you know, it might be very helpful because so many kids are abused at school. That's why the Huffington Post did that. Okay.
Well, guess what?
That's what they say.
Guess what they say when the kid in detention comes forward and dares to say what happened to him or her? Well, that little liar. I mean, that's why that kid was in detention to begin with. They're a delinquent. They're a bad kid. You know, they're causing trouble. They're not telling the truth. And what do abusers like to choose? The vulnerable child, the child in distress, the child that has difficulty expressing themselves, handicapped children with special needs
yeah.
are 4 times more likely to be abused. Children with medical needs, 33% mm-hmm. more opportunity to be abused. You know, so these children are so vulnerable. And I remember working in a school once where there was a teacher who was very, very well off. This was a kid. This was a school for kids that had a lot of financial issues and educational issues. And he was considered such a good Samaritan for bringing his, you know, great education and knowledge to work with these poor children. And he really kind of soaked in the adulation of that. And I started noticing that he was being unusually focused on some of the young women. And some young girls started to disclose things, and I took it all the way to the top and made my reports. And they were just like, well, these girls do poorly in school, and they're ganging up on this guy and whatnot. And I fought and fought and fought to get rid of this guy. And eventually he ended up touching a young woman, and her father came barreling through the school and, almost swinging, and suddenly something was done about it. But I thought, well, what about all of these disclosures and reports that we made prior to this touching incident? Get rid of them before they take action. And even teachers, even the teachers advocating for the students sometimes are not believed until something dastardly happens. And then,
That's where, like, the police department, when I was at one of the universities, Centenary, I was there quite a bit, and I had the police there one night. They came to listen to me speak. I didn't know they were going to be there. I had no idea. So, I'm such a clown. I had to watch myself and so forth, and I had to teach them. And everything that I taught them, they took back to the academy. And I was told that I had, given them a good, speech and all this other stuff, and they thanked me for the information that I gave them. Now, police officers have to realize, I don't care whether a kid is a juvenile delinquent. Huh?
Right.
Now, listen, even those who are over in juvie, because I used to work there too, sometimes they get abused by staff, or in some of the organizations, they have police officers there. I worked in a facility like there where we housed the young offenders. And so, of course, there are police officers there. That doesn't make them God. There was one that actually abused one of the kids, one of the boys, not on the girl's side, one of the boys, all right?
Yeah.
So, and it was a hard thing to get people to understand that not everyone is perfect just because you're a police officer. Now, I love cops. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But there was one that had to go. Okay, he took a kid's head and put it in the toilet. That was one kind of abuse. Okay,
wow.
Come on. One I'll tell on air. But the rest of it, you can just use your imagination. And then, of course, there was that case not that long ago where I was picketing outside of the courthouse, and I had been given an email. One was written to me, where people were begging for me to go and be a part of the protest. So a friend of mine and I went, and we were standing outside, and this terrible sheriff, you've probably heard the name, Sheriff Bullock. Have you heard that case? I don't know if you did or not.
Oh, it sounds familiar.
Look it up. He's dead now. He died at the age of 84. Now, one thing that the survivors have to understand, today we're in a better position than we were many, many, many years ago. There are organizations out there like Child Help, which is wonderful. They can call NASCA and go to the contact list. They can talk to me if they want. I'm just about up at the top, right under Dr. Nancy. And, if you're being abused, don't think, just because you've been in juvie or you are in juvie, because I can work with kids as well. I do that at times. That you're not going to be heard, because yes, there is that problem out there, but the police officers too have to learn. Again, the stats that I just gave you, 98% of the time kids are not lying, okay?
Absolutely.
And, they have to be heard. They have to have a voice. So
Mentioned Sheriff Bullock and the turning of a mm-hmm. blind eye to child sexual abuse, and this I call those people the careerist folks that work in child welfare, the people mm-hmm. in law enforcement or the medical profession, anyone who turns a blind eye to child abuse or says children lie or tries to, I call them colluders with the predators. I say your hand is now on that child as well, whether you ever touch them. The fact that you turned a blind eye, you know, the Penn State case and others, where there were so many people who knew what was going on or who had a sense of what was going on and looked the other way. And those people are in their own right the predator's best friend, their ally, their support system, because you left that little child hanging. You left that little child experiencing what they experienced, and you gave them something to deal with for a lifetime because you didn't want to ruffle some feathers or fill out some forms or have a difficult day at work. And so those people should be ashamed of themselves as well.
You bet. And when I was down there, I get so mad when I think about this. I really do, Daphne. It was like 94 degrees out. I don't do well in heat. I melt, okay? My makeup melts, my hair melts, and I melt inside. I just don't like heat. So, you know, but I didn't care. I was there for a good cause. Now, this sheriff, when he was actively doing this, was years before. The survivors grew up. And they were like in their 30s. Some looked like a little younger, some a little bit older. And it wasn't all of them, but it was quite a few of them protesting outside the courthouse because they wanted him. They didn't care that this sheriff had turned 84 years old.
Right.
They were pushing him into the courtroom and everything in a wheelchair, and he had an oxygen tank. I don't care. Even if he did 6 months in jail, it would have been better, okay?
Exactly.
But because there were so many people outside protesting, and we were quiet. Okay, we weren't rioting, all right? We just had signs, and people would ask what's mm-hmm. going on. They'd pull over, what's going on? Well, it caused a ruckus inside of the courtroom. They didn't like having people so many. So what they did was they changed the county for him to be heard the proper way. In the meantime, he died.
Yeah.
So you see, he was 84 years old, on oxygen. So survivors, oh, my God, if they'd only come forward. Now, you can come forward today easier, you know, than many, many, many years ago. Okay, this is my point of trying to get this across. And because we do have our organizations and we do have people. I mean, they're starting to talk more about child abuse, even on the news you hear it today, than they ever did, okay? So this is good for survivors. But who do survivor children... Okay, before they become survivor children, when they're in the house and they're being abused, who can they go to? See, this is a problem.
Well, this is part of why we added this feature of text-to-chat, because we realized, especially during the pandemic, if you were right next door to everybody quarantining, try to call a hotline on your family's phone line or on the phone, and someone's going to hear you. But you can shut the door, go into a bathroom, and a child can text 1-800-4-CHILD and start having a complete conversation with one of our counselors. And there's a little button that you can kind of push if someone comes near, and just boop, you're right out on your computer to chat to. There's like a little line too that you could pop out of, and it you can look like you're doing your homework and have a full scale conversation and say, hey, I'm trapped at home with my abuser. That, you know, he's getting more and more drunk. I'm really scared. And our counselors can help get somebody over there to take care of those kids. And if you're a woman in a domestic violence or a man in a domestic violence situation, you can also have that kind of private conversation, even with the abuser in the house, and still be able to get some support. So that's just something to know for those who are in situations where maybe they feel that someone's watching them constantly. You know, how do I get that help while that person's in the home or barricading or controlling me to where I can't feel like I can leave?
Right. And that is so, so, so important. Because, you see, my abuse started when I was six. And that was my sexual abuse started when I was six. And I was in the house of a pedophile. And I had no one who cared for me. My mother was gone. I didn't know where she was. And my so-called father, and I say so-called, I found out through ancestry that he wasn't my father. I had no one. So who could I tell? You see, this is a terrible thing. Now, there's many of me's out there, you see. So if we have to get the word out, and I say we, all of us, well, we work together and to some degree, because for God's sake, kids out there, I know how they feel. I know that scared, lonely, hopeless feeling. By the time I was 7 and a half, I squealed on him, and then he almost ran me down with his vehicle. He meant to kill me. He wanted to, okay? He said he was going to, and he chased me, okay? So don't think I don't have nightmares. but he didn't get
me. And you're such a verbal storyteller, but it's brilliant that you go back to that little person that didn't even have words probably to describe any of this, trying to tell her story. And that is what's so important. People, you're able to put so much language and story around it, but you still can remember the boom, 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 the beating heart, the fear, the sinking stomach, the bad feeling. And that's what these kids need to hear, that I get you. I know what this feels like. You don't have to have the right words. I believe you. I believe you.
Yes.
So important.
And they need that. They need that, and that they absolutely do. Let me go back to Lori. Then I'll go down to Bill. And there's people that listen through the computer and because they don't want to come on air. They don't know how easy going we are, but that's okay. Let me see if Bill has a comment to make. I know he's working, but okay.
Yeah,
Bill,
hi,
there?
Carol. And hi there, Daphne. It's
Bill.
Good to have you back.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, we look forward to this again. We do it about every year, and we're delighted to do so because, you know, frankly, when we founded NASCA, one of the first things that went on the website was the 1-800 for child and child help, you know, information. Because that's how important I believed it was. You know, it is.
Mm-hmm.
We've had this up now for, I don't know, 20, no, not 20, 15 years, something like that, 14, 15 years. And it was literally the first thing posted on the web pages. So,
no, that's very cool. We appreciate it so much because, you know, it's like you guys open up this forum and you get people talking and you get people sharing ideas. And you know, Carol, when you share your story, I mean, this is a harrowing story about a little person. And you know, so many kids, I mean, the fact that you had enough gumption at 7 to, like, come forward, I mean, but you can even see that a strong little kid that gives words to it is still in so much peril and danger the minute they come forward. There's a whole new kind of danger that they haven't even realized while they're being abused. And so the fact that you guys have created this forum, but then also to tell the stories and then also to give that, like you say, Bill, that resource afterwards where, poof, I just went through. I heard some tough stuff and reminded me of some of my stuff, and you just pick up the phone, call, we're there for you, and then they know they can just come back to the next show and get a little bit of that peace of mind and that support again for what you guys do. So thank you guys for this great service and your longevity too, just keeping a safe space for people.
I was about 25 years into my healing when this got launched. So it's 15 years now more, and that means I've been doing it for 40 years. So we kind of know what we're talking about. And this website and this nonprofit is designed to be as comfortable as it can be for the survivor. Because I have a lot of experience in being extremely uncomfortable with what I encountered along the way. And ultimately, I had to retire early. I sat down at my desk, which I was capable of doing, and said, now what kind of website, what kind of nonprofit would I do? And so I eliminated everything that had bothered me, and I included everything that would, and that's what NASCA is. And therefore, we find it's thought of as pretty comfortable, because I'm a survivor myself. I experience all the negative stuff that other groups, and of course, child help is also a very comfortable place, a comforting place. And we want people to know that it's out there and you've been doing, you know, such a wonderful job for 40 years. So God bless you, and thank you again, Taffy, for being on the show tonight.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. I'm lucky to be able to come and share with you guys. And you know what's crazy is now you guys are kind of pioneers in this, because now agencies that are starting up actually demand that you have survivors as part of your board or part of your advisory team, and they call it lived experience. If you don't have people with lived experience, you don't know what you're talking about.
That's
well,
right.
I think we have thousands and thousands. I know.
Absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely. It's what makes you good.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Daphne. Appreciate you being here again.
Thank you, guys. God
you
bless
bet.
You.
Oh, yeah. So thank you for that, Bill. Two things I want to talk about, but I want to get Lori on first. And so, Lori, you might have a comment, or maybe you want to ask a question.
I've gotten a lot of information from you, things that I didn't even realize just from the very beginning, because it never occurred to me to really call somebody to talk to when I can't sleep. So even though
absolutely.
I am, you know, older, and I should have known that, I did it. So I'm learning tonight, and I find you just so very awesome to listen to. You
oh,
and Carol and
you.
Bill, I mean, so much information.
Thank you, Lori, and I love that. You know, I feel like the Bill talked about like how far into his healing, right? I don't think it describes it as this ongoing process, and I think that's 100% right. It is a full journey. It is your whole life. It is ups and downs, the forward movement, and then backsliding and frustration, and so. Having those little tools and touchstones, communities and connections, and even an anonymous place where you don't have to give your name or your story, even you can just say something simple like, hey, I'm too tired to even tell you what went on, but I just feel anxious, having nightmares, night terrors, and just let someone walk you through the process. You don't have to be in immediate crisis to be an emotional crisis and need that support.
That's right. And you know, it says
and by
here,
the way, there's no small trauma. I saw a great video.
Okay.
If you look up, you'll like this. This is Kevin Smith, the director, did a video for People magazine, and it was about trauma. And he described an incident that happened to him. And he said, I just packed it away, no big deal, not part of my issue, and never thought about it again. And there are no small traumas. When, you know, Carol brought up a great point. She said, hey, molestation is in her mind is bad, because when we start to differentiate whose is worse and what is worse, some people are going to go through horrific, unbelievable things that you can't even imagine. But some people are going to be highly traumatized by something that maybe they think, well, this wasn't as bad as rape, so I probably shouldn't feel bad about it. But the point is, if it's keeping you up and it's freaking you out and it's getting in the way of love and life and relationships and health and moving forward, it matters. And you deserve someone to pay attention to it and value it and support you. So if you pick up that phone and you think, well, you know, maybe there's a child who's in crisis right now who needs this more than I do, we have plenty of counselors. Just make the call.
That's right.
Wow. Awesome.
It is awesome. Now you see why I wanted them on. So, you know, I tell all the people, you know, I want child help on. Because you have so much, you know, to offer. And two, it's 24 hours a day you can call. Because they have that 1-800 number. And for a child. And it's 24 hours a day. It's 7 days a week. It doesn't take a vacation, as I like to say. And it's with the professional counselors, and I found this out. And they speak over 170 languages, okay?
Yeah.
They provide assistance in over 170 languages. The hotline offers crisis intervention, information, and referrals to thousands of emergency, social service, and support resources. So I wanted to get that out because I want people to know, you know, how much you do offer, you know, to society, to people who call. I called at 2 o'clock in the morning one time, Daphne, I don't know if I was speaking to you. I spoke to other people there too. in the morning because I didn't know exactly. This is before we got to know each other, right? So, all right. So anyway, I called at 2 o'clock in the morning because I wanted to see what, you know, the counselors would sound like. Okay, there's a little bit of music. I waited for like half a minute, not even. And someone came on, and I made like I was a person who needed help. That's what I did. And so I was saying, oh, coming out. I don't even remember what I said anymore. But the, you know, lady was doing her job. She was doing it so well. She was so professional. And finally I said to her, hey, you can stop now. And she said, what? So I told her who I was, you know, and what organization, you know, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse and NASCA. I gave her the website. And I said, not you people, not Child Help, but other other websites, and I've gotten all kinds of information that when they call hotline numbers, they get nowhere.
And that's part of there's a new thing where they do almost exclusively like bots and things like that, where they have like, then it's like predestined answers based on AI. And for my money, there's just nothing that replaces the compassionate voice, like you said, of a person at 2 a.m. who's working that night shift, who is a degree crisis counselor, who has a lot of experience in this, and who has a vast database. So if you say, hey, I'm calling from Poughkeepsie, or I'm calling from Orlando, we can get you resources in your area, talk you through the issues, listen compassionately, and also, you know, work through, hey, I need to get some legal help, or I'm in a custody battle, or I'm in a crisis situation where I'm scared to drop my kids off this week, and at least talk through those issues and help people learn how to document. You could be a concerned citizen, but I think what you did is exactly what we want people to do. If you're giving that number out on our little cards, as you say, like when you go out to talk, you should test that system. You should say, hey, if I'm going to tell you to call Child Help, it's because I called myself and tested and made sure they were up at 2 and made sure that they were saying the right things.
That's what I do. That's exactly what I do. So some of those phone calls you get is because of my mouth, because I do tell people about you all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and when I hand those cards out, like Bill was saying before, your number's on there, okay? And then if you turn the card over, I think it even says Child Help. I think it goes a little bit further than that. So I'm due to get a lot more cards again because I've handed all of my cards out. I went to fumble for them just the other day. I thought I had 3 maybe left. I had nothing left. I go, oh, my God. So the person I was speaking to, I couldn't give him a card. That's my point. So I have to get a lot more made. But I hand them out all the time.
And we can try to get some for you, and also some Courage First cards. So if you're ever speaking to school programs and, you know, or sport YMCA or anything, you definitely have those to pass out as well. So we'll try to, after the show, get some of that material to you, because it is that word of mouth from another survivor, and especially an advocate for survivors, means the world. They trust
you. I very much appreciate that. And because it's such a terrible thing. Now, I read, because I told you, I didn't know if we were going to have a website tonight or whatever. I didn't know if I was going to have an infection in my, you know, it was just a bad day. So I looked at the programs. I looked at your programs. And I was really, what I was reading was outrageous. And then also, too, speaking about the pandemic. Now, before the pandemic, a suicide was always a thing, a deal, that it was going up each year, which I'm aware of because I call the hospitals. I speak at a Mayo Clinic. I speak at Presbyterian Hospital in New York City and some of these others. And I ask them about the emergency room and kids being brought in, what are the typical type of injuries that the children have. And now, of course, it's the head injuries. Okay, you know that. And those kids, they have to keep a lot of time because they're so, you know, so abused and so forth. And it's just a terrible thing. But what I want to ask you about is the, I think the people would like to hear this too, the Alice C. Tyler Village of Child Help. I looked it up. I found it. It's right there. Why don't you tell the public about that and how they work with the children?
That's it. Well, the work that we do in residential treatment. So we might get children from various, you know, whether they're CPS, DCS, some children coming from foster care, some people with caregivers, those types of situations. And we have some kids are, frankly, in situations kind of like what you described in your own life, where if a little seven-year-old told and someone believed them and advocated for them, and they'd say, get them away from this predator right away and into a safe place. And it might be a place like a village where you have cottages, you're with other kids, there's caretakers 24/7. They have a barn therapy program because some kids don't want to talk to another adult. If that adult has been abusing you, you definitely feel maybe a little more comfortable. We've had kids that want to go in the barn and tell their stories to a horse or a dog or something. So that kind of bringing animals in for comfort, allowing children to draw their feelings in art therapy, that's kind of in the extreme case, you know, where a child needs that 24/7 care. We also have Child Help Children's Centers, which are advocacy centers, and these are great. Again, we take little Carol, who came forward at seven. Imagine if one of those great police officers got involved, brought you into an advocacy center. You would have walked through those doors. A therapy dog would have greeted you. You would have sat in a room and told your story to a compassionate counselor, not realizing there was a little camera up in the ceiling, and a bunch of tough detectives and people were watching in the other room, taping that, so you would only have to tell your story one time, not have to go over it over again, not get confused by some clever, defense attorney for the predator or adult saying, oh, what do you mean this or that? Having a forensic interviewer get the story straight and then having that medical exam and everything done in the same place so that that followed you to court. And sometimes we even have, you probably have heard of BACA, the Bikers Against Child Abuse.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes when the kids are afraid to come forward and tell their stories, BACA will show up, give them a little vest, stand up, and actually block the view of, you can't make a nasty face at that child while they're.
Are we losing her?
Can you hear me?
No, I lost you for a moment there. Go ahead. Let's try again. I don't know what happened.
No, just
you were talking about
you know. Yeah, and the advocacy centers are just such a great place for kids to get that every professional that needs to be part of your case in one room and advocating. So, you know, we've come so far in what we are able to do for children.
And it's so amazing, and it's so important because, you know, like, okay, by the time I got out of that place and went someplace else, and I ended up in New York. I was born in New York, so I was comfortable in the city. I'm more of a city person. Right. I don't like the bears where I see roaming around here. I don't like the coyotes either. I think I went too far up into the hills. All right, whatever. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, like I had to be taken along with 13 other girls. There's 14 of us to the police department, and they had caught finally. They finally caught this maniac out there who was kidnapping and raping little eight-year-old girls. I was eight by that time.
Wow.
I'm living in New York at Staten Island. So he pulled me into his vehicle, and away I went. And he followed my city bus home. And he knew where I lived, okay? So we owned a lot of property. I give my mother and stepfather, you want to call them that, you know, they worked hard. They had a big flower farm. We owned many acres. It was so big, Daphne, that one end was Signs Road and the other end was Victory Boulevard, okay? That's how many acres, all those acres in there we owned.
Mm-hmm.
This perpetrator, I can't even say it on air. This person, okay, knew where I lived. So if he picked me up at one end of my driveway, now he wasn't a murderer. He may have turned into one. I don't know. But he could drop me off at the other end of the driveway and I'd get home. The house was like in the middle, okay? Which means he probably came in and bought flowers for his wife. I was telling Lori this the other day. He probably came in, bought flowers for his wife, and went home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So when he was caught, now this is where I am so against the system. When he was caught, and there were 14 of us that had to go to court, we didn't have a place where we could go and tell our stories. We had to go into the courtroom, okay? And I had to go into the police department before that. And then when they actually caught this nut, we went into the courtroom, and they thought it would be therapeutic for we, the children, to see him getting sentenced. Well, one little girl standing next to me, she urinated on the floor. That's how scared she was to see this monster again, okay? And I was moving around because I didn't want to get wet. And people were all moving around. The kids, I'm talking about the kids now, we were in the back of the courtroom. This place was packed with people, packed. So, you see, everybody came to the courthouse because to have 14 children at one time, okay, was a big deal, all right? So, anyway, he got 3 years. That's it.
Wow.
So I'm standing there thinking I'm 8 years old, and when he gets out, I'll be 11 years old, and he knows where I live. So you see, that
terrifying.
Adds to the trauma. It adds to that trauma,
yep.
The fear factor, okay? And I developed panic attacks at 9 years old. Now, my reason, and they lasted till I was 49, and I got over myself. I won't even tell how on this air, not tonight. But I don't have them anymore, obviously. I'm on this phone.
Wonderful.
So, yeah. So, anyway, the point is that the system has to change, too. Because when you catch a pedophile, and then you go up to the next age group, the hebephiliacs, I think they're called hebephilites or whatever the heck they call them. I've got to look it up. I have it written on my wall here. I have a whole bunch of things written on my wall on paper. And there's three different categories. You have those that go after infants. How disgusting is that? And then you have, you know, the toddlers and then up to, you know, age of 12, say. And then they want the 12-year-olds and up, okay? So you have the three different categories. And when these monsters get caught, now the best place for them is in prison because, let me tell you something, you can't change them.
No.
And a lot of study, for decades they've been studying pedophiles and then those in the next category, let's just call them sex addicts, sex perverts, whatever you want. They can't change them. Now, unfortunately, that's the truth. But when they're on the inside, and I hate to put it this way, but you'll understand, this is where a lot of justice comes in. Because on the inside, a lot of them have nieces, they have nephews, they have maybe it's their own children, you know, that are outside and they have to worry about nuts like that. They might be in for theft, but they're not a pedophile themselves, all right?
Right.
So
even among criminals, these monsters are considered a different breed. And, you know, that what you described, too, is a lot of people don't realize. Sometimes they think, well, how did so many things happen to one person? We know that statistically, if a child has been abused within the home, it makes them so much more prey for external abuse, whether it's others knowing that the child is not receiving support, whether the child experiences other forms of abuse like neglect, and it just makes it rife for other types of abusers to find them all the way up through personal relationships later in life. It sets a path. And to your point, then if the system doesn't support and these guys get back out in a short amount of time, that little bit of safety that you have for a year or two or three when they're locked away, it preys upon your mind and it makes you fearful of the next step. And that's why it's so important to have really put these predators away, because a lot of them have one predator can have so many children in a lifetime. They can harm so many little ones. It just takes one predator, and often it's their own children, friends, family. You know, God forbid they work with children and sports clubs or schools or in the church, you know, and they'll harm virtually anyone that they can groom and get their hands on.
Well, that's well said. And this is why I had, starting way back when with the conversation, I was worried about the kids out on the field. Because you see, predators like this, they go where children go. This is what people have to understand. And I get so mad at people because, you see, maybe I'm doing a presentation or whatever, or speaking to a group of people. I've had as many as 200 at my presentations over at the university, especially when I told my story, okay? My book was new then, and it made it all the way over to Japan. What a riot. Oh, my God. And that's my payment right there. But the point is this. The very point is this. Is I'll have parents say to me, I think it happened in one of the churches I was at. Yeah, it did. Say to me, I don't want to scare my children. I don't want to tell them things and put more in their heads to have them worry about. I want them to be children first and then tell them, you know, later on and leave it at that. You see, there's a time and a place. People have to understand this. And you, who better than you? You understand. If we don't tell our children about, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is the way I always put
it.
If we don't do this, and the children, you know, when you're giving them a bath, okay, when you're giving them a bath, they'll say, Mommy, what's this? Daddy, what's that? Blah, blah, blah. Well, you tell them the names of it, okay?
Yeah.
Because when I was standing in that police department, even though I'd already been sexually abused, so we're talking about when I was 8 years old, okay, in New York, okay, because I moved from place to place, I didn't know my body part names, so all I could do was point, okay? And you see, children have to have the information. If God made our head, if he made our neck, he made our shoulders, he makes our breasts, he makes our stomach, he makes our vagina, or he makes our penis, whatever it is, if we're male or female, and our knees and our feet and all this other stuff, well, then don't be afraid to give the proper names to your body parts, because a child who is being questioned, well, what happened? And they don't know the names of their body parts. They stand there and they feel stupid, like I did in the police department. And I'm pointing, okay, here, here, here. This is what happened, okay? And thing, using the word.
Yeah, and a clever defense attorney can say, well, the little girl just pointed here, I think, to her thigh or her knee, and or the child said he touched my cookies, you know, were they chocolate chip or vanilla?
Oh,
I mean, so if you give kids funny little names for things, you know, my flowers, oh, I think he handed the child a rose, you know, I don't know what. And so that really puts a child at a disadvantage. And I will tell you how hard it is to fight to get prevention in schools. I tried to get teachers just to, I was supporting a representative and testifying before the House to try to get teachers some extra credit for teaching stuff like this. Are you a elementary school teacher just to do basic body safety with a very simple curriculum? And they were against it. They said that belongs in the home. Well, Carol, you can tell me how well they were teaching you in the home about your body safety and how lovely that was. You know that half of the other through similar types of things that you probably never knew about, you know, 1 in 4, 1 in 6. We know that kids are being harmed, and that's just the one we know about, not some of them that we'll never find out about. So, you know, I was so angry that these folks wouldn't listen, and there was all these sweet school teachers saying, well, we have to think of the children. And so I got up there, and by the time I got up there, I'm sure we share a little bit of a personality type. I was a little bit heated. And so I got up there, I was a little mad, and I said, hey, you all agree with the Second Amendment, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
And I said, oh, great. So if somebody breaks into your house and wants to steal from you or aggress your family, you're going to stand your ground.
Wow, of course.
And I said, great. Mm-hmm. So you allow your children to walk out of your home, unarmed with prevention education, unarmed with body safety, unarmed to protect themselves. I said, you're like the predator's best friend. And so you'll protect your TV and all your belongings and everything, but you send those little innocent, vulnerable victims out into the world with no knowledge, and you expect them to know when predators are doing things to them, when they don't even understand their own bodies and what's happening. And I said, that's criminal.
And so I think they were so confused by the conversation that they ended up kind of voting for it, because they're like, you know, because I basically said, you know, do you want to be part of the problem? So we've got to get this information out, and you're so right. Teach kids the bare bones basics. We just say wear a swimsuit covers. Like, nobody should touch you in these places. End of story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Simple stuff.
I mean, we're not doing any justice for our children. You know, we're doing an injustice. This is what I tell them. Yes, you can teach them how to cross the street, and you should. You know, and you can teach them not to take candy and stuff and pills today, right? Or whatever from people that you don't know, and you know, you don't know where it came from. I mean, that's a good thing to teach them. But teach them also, too, about the rest of it. And don't say, you know, I don't want to teach them at this age because they're too young. Because look at all the predators. I was six, all right? I was six, and many of them are a lot younger than me, you know what I'm saying, who were first, you know, assaulted. Because that's what it is. It's crimes against children.
It's crimes against children. And child helps speak up, be safe, prevention, education is evidence-based and age-appropriate. So there is nothing your child's going to learn that is not 100% age-appropriate from pre-K all the way through high school. And the conversation gets more complex the older the kids get, but it's all the most simple, straightforward scenarios. So when they get older, they start to learn about what trafficking grooming looks like, what more sophisticated online stuff looks like. But even we've taught in preschools, and I remember a teacher saying, I don't think they'll understand this. And she shared a story. She actually called our facilitator back and said, oh, my gosh, I was so skeptical. And a few weeks later, a little boy was kind of reaching under the skirt of a little girl, and she stood up, and she put her arms around herself, and she said, it's my body. And he pulled his hands away, and he said, I'm sorry. And so both the little boy and the little girl learned. He learned to keep his hands to himself, and she learned, it's my body. And they were both able to just, like, continue playing. And I just thought, that's what a culture of safety looks like when you teach the right lessons.
Absolutely. And that's so true. And you can tell when a kid has been educated as to, you know, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And kids outside playing, this is really quickly I can say this, kids outside playing in the neighborhood not far from me, they were playing in the front yard. They were playing ball. They were playing kickball, big yard. And this van was going around and around and around and around. And there was a little girl that they wanted. There were two guys in this van, unmarked vehicle, okay, white van. And so anyway, all of a sudden, this shows you how brazen they are. He parked the vehicle. The one guy behind the wheel parked the vehicle. The other one got out, and he started to walk towards where these children were playing. The other one got out, and he was with them also. They get to where that little girl is, and they want that little girl. They're going to take her. They're going to kidnap her.
Oh,
well,
my God.
The little girl had been spoken to by her parents. Bravo. She saw them approaching. And she started to scream. And when she was screaming, the others started to scream. But still, this one guy was more brazen than the other. He continued to go towards her. I think he thought he could just plain reach forward, you know, and get her.
Yeah.
But she kicked him so hard in the shin.
Amazing.
She kicked him so hard in the shin. Yes. And she, you know, they were playing ball. Maybe she was a good athlete. I don't know. But she kicked him very hard in the shin. And people were able to get the license plate number. He ran as he could back to the van, and so did the other one. He was already there, I think. They took off. By the time they got out of that complex, okay, that neighborhood complex, the police were at the other end. Thank God there was a car in the area. And
nice.
But it didn't matter because they had the description of them. They had the description of the vehicle. They had the description. They had the license plate number, and they were caught.
Fantastic.
Kidnapping.
And you know, one of our
one of our body safety rules is I can yell, I can run, I can get, so it's called I Have Choices, and they give the kids real scenarios like that and what to do in those cases. And that's, you know, that girl, she was ready. She was ready, and it kept her safe. And imagine if she didn't have that lesson and didn't know, we may never know what happened to her.
That's right. She would have been a statistic. And it's terrible. It's just terrible, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, by not training your children properly, that's why I keep saying, you're doing them an injustice.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, we want to keep them, you know, away from things like that. We want to keep them, you know, in the dark, if you will, in the dark for a while longer. Well, you're putting them at risk is what you're doing.
100%.
And
you can, and our message is power. Our little program is fun. It's empowering. It's about you and your choices and your safety. And it is not dark. It is not sad. It is not miserable. But boy, when those kids come forward and we find out which little kid in the class is an abuse victim, it changes the course of that classroom. And that child gets help. And your child also is smarter and better prepared for what could possibly happen. And the kids become support for the other kids. So children will sometimes disclose to each other, and they know what to do to help their little friends.
Well, thank you so much for everything you said. You were a wonderful guest. The show is over.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
well,
I wish you guys love.
We always think about you.
Thank you for what you do. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. And you'll be hearing from me again. And anytime you want to send little bits and pieces like you were talking about, things that maybe we could put, you know, post, that's great. You know, like the telephone number you were talking about, you know, and put, you know, child help on top and so forth. And so that people can understand, you know, that the adults can understand, you know, how they can teach their children. Oh, I could turn that into a show. Yes, I could.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Well,
thank you
so much,
having
Daphne.
Me.
Okay. Good
All
night.
Right.
Now.
Bye, guys.
Good.
Have a great
Bye-bye.
Night.
Bye-bye. You
Bye,
too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, hon. Thank you. Good night, everybody, and God bless.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was you are forgotten.
Love Talk Radio.
All right, very good.